Hey everyone, I'm Kari.
Hello everyone, I'm Brie.
And this is CSI Talk. Welcome back, everyone, to another week on another episode of CSI Talk. Hi, before we get into today's episode, just want to let y'all know that this is a safe space for you. This is always going to be a safe space for you. And we love you. Also, I think Simone is from season 3. I think that Detective Chapman is back.
She has been pictured in some of the behind-the-scenes pictures.
I saw on a picture from Sarah Gilman. She's coming back. We don't know if she's coming back as a regular character or just a recurring character. We're not sure. Also, Bo and Penny are still not regular characters. Is no more. What are you guys waiting for? It comes to regular characters.
Remember, it took Greg about 4 seasons to become a regular character.
Yeah, I know, but...
And he went almost on every episode since day...
Well, speaking of Greg is getting on the nerves on this last couple episodes of season 11. Well, as we said last week,
season 11 was not Greg's season.
Yeah.
Mine is a kid before Ryan.
Well, season 11, it's a dark season, and this last 3 episodes to close the Nate. I was going to say Nate Archibald. Because I'm sorry, because I've been watching this review video on Gossip Girl to close this story arc of Nate Haskell. There is a 3-parter episode starting on episode 20 of season 11 called Father of the Bride. We glanced on this 3 episodes last week. So the synopsis for the first episode, Father of the Bride, is the official synopsis is after serial killer Nate Haskell escapes from prison, he resurfaces after he emails a disturbing video to the father of one of his brides whom he's threatening to kill. But just a quick recap, Nate Haskell at this point, he has escaped prison for a while now with the help of his brides. And they are called brides because he got engaged to several women while he was in custody. That actually happens. A lot of serial killers who go to prison will get engaged. Sometimes they get married. But this will happen. I think most recently, Gypsy Girl said that she got a lot of marriage proposals, big proposals, when she went in jail. The episode begins with Nick and Ray going to a farmhouse. It begins when they are lost, Nick saying that he actually knows that area because he gets called to that location all the time, and that is important because that location is far from the city. And at the beginning, they don't really know how to get to the farm, and then they will actually learn how to get there by the end. When they get to the farm, the camera takes a long look at the owner of the farm. That is important. When Nick and Ray are directed towards the body, they find the body of a female victim, but the hands are of a male victim. They're dealing with 2 victims here that they cannot ID. Not right now, because they don't have the documents to ID the victims. Nick and Ray are like, oh, we're going to have to search this whole area to look for more body parts. Then Ray gets a call to go to the precinct because Haskell has resurfaced. And he's like, Nick, I gotta go. I'm sorry, I gotta go. He leaves like, oh boy, Nick, all by himself.
Well, at least nothing happens.
This time.
And once. I
remind you all what happened when Nick was left all alone. Recovering body parts.
At least this time nothing happened.
Obviously nobody told Ray what happened when Nicholas left all alone recovering body parts.
And nobody told him about what happened to Holly Gretz.
Yeah, nobody told him about Natalie Davis either.
And what happened to Catherine that one time when she had to fight off somebody.
Nobody told him anything. Anyway, so he goes back to the station. He's already losing it. And actually what happened is they have received a video from Nate Haskell. And Nate Haskell is actually mocking him. They find out that the video came from the parents of Vivian Timesdale, who was on one of Nate Haskell's brides. And the video actually was received 4 days prior when the parents of Vivian are questioned about it. They just say that, oh, she's a liar. She lies a lot. You can clearly see there's a pattern here, like, that's already established. Vivian parents, they don't actually believe what Nate is saying. They just took this video to the police, because as we'll find out later, this is actually the second video that they received. This is not the first. They've only taken the video to the police because this is the second time the hospital has reached out to them. Well, in autopsy, my favorite sequence of CSI, and actually, there's going to be a large portion of this three-parter they're going to see played in autopsy. Doc Robbins said all the cuts were made post-mortem after the victims were already dead, and it was most likely made by a hand axe. And the injuries on the female victim are consistent with the same weapon used. So both of the victims were killed by the same weapon. Look, it's normal for two or three cases happening at the same time at CSI. But we would find out later that the case that Nick and eventually Greg are working on is related to Nate. Archie, he is looking for the video, and he's like, the clock on the camera is off and the GPS is off as well. Like, there's no way to trace it, and they cannot point, and they cannot give you a location. And look who arrives. Sophia Curtis.
Captain
Sophia Curtis. You know, she's the deputy chief now. She tells Ray that she's calling the feds. She's like, how come you guys did not call the FBI before? This thing is getting way too convoluted. Like, this plot is way too convoluted. How come you did not call in the feds?
Seriously, like, finally somebody's speaking some sense.
Exactly. Like, if Sophia was there after Nate Haskell had escaped, she'd be on the phone calling the feds. She'd be like, look, the serial killer is on the loose. We need your guys' help.
Come on, like, why didn't Brass think of that? Why didn't Eckley think of that? Had a buddy with the feds earlier on.
Was kind of like the brand. If the night shift is all about emotion and all of that, Eckley was the one that was making some sense, was the voice of reason at the night shift. Why didn't he like, oh, maybe we should call the FBI? Because is this too much for us to handle? No, Sophia Curtis has to come all the way from wherever she was working and be like, I'm calling the feds because this mess is just too messy.
See, I love her in the few scenes she has in this episode.
Yeah, and by the way, she's an Oppenheimer, and this movie just won the Golden Globes. And
my dad got that for Christmas, but you know me, my focus lately.
Yeah, I know. So this movie just won the Golden Globes, so I just, you know, it's fair to say that she's a Golden Globe winner.
Yeah.
I mean, by proxy, but anyways. She's in that movie. She's just in a few scenes. She plays one of Oppenheimer's lovers, because that guy had way too many lovers throughout his life. But I'm reading his biography. But anyways, she's on that movie. She's beautiful in that movie. I literally screamed when I saw her. There's no reason for you to scream during that movie, and I did. I was like, that's Sophia Curtis!
Okay, give some respect. It's Louisa Lombard.
Yeah, I know, but when I watched that movie, I had just come from a marathon of CSI, okay? I was like, I had literally watched a marathon on CSI, and then my friend was like, let's go to the movies. I know you've been wanting to watch Oppenheimer. I was like, totally, let's do it. And then we went to watch the movie, and then I was like, oh my God, that's Sophia Curtis.
Well, this has been, you know, doing my binges of Doctor Who. I'm like, that is snapping up in the show. So then I go to the show and search up the actor's name, because I'm not always great with actor's names.
Yeah, like the same thing happened when I was watching Criminal Minds, and I was like, oh my God, that's Alvis from CSI. No, that's not Alvis. That's his name from the line. No, that's Nelko from CSI. But anyways, Sophia gets there. She says she's involved in the feds. Ray is totally against the idea of involving the feds. He's like doing everything that he can to prove that Nate is still in Las Vegas, which he will not be able to prove that Nate is in Las Vegas at the end of the day. You know?
Nope.
They bring in Avery Teensdale, which is the father of the bride's computer, to the lab so Archie can go through it. And they find out that was not the first time that Nate Haskell had any contact with him. In autopsy, we're still in autopsy. Nick hasn't left the autopsy, but Doc Robbins tells him that the female victim has gone through several procedures. So she has gone through several procedures. And Nick finds out that the male hands belongs to a Dr. Graham Cole, who is a plastic surgeon. So he and Greg is now on the case because Ray totally left him. And they kind of break into the office. I mean, they find two separate blood events, which means that they have their primary. The bodies that they found on the farm was a body dump. Nate Haskell has told Avery, which is the father of the bride, that he had to go to the park and the CSIs, the police, they will make a whole operation to track down the Haskell, and including they put an earpiece on Avery, and Avery gets a phone, which is a burger that Nate has gotten him to talk to Nate, but this guy removes the earpiece, and he's talking to Nate Haskell, and there are officers all around the park where Avery is supposed to meet Nate Haskell, and the camera paces, and they see another one of the brides, Tina Vincent. Avery gets the gifts that Nate has left, not for him, but for Ray, but he doesn't know that yet. And Tina is brought in for questioning. She's not going to get arrested, but she's brought in for questioning. Catherine is asking, like, what we were doing at the park, and she's like, I was just, you know, walking. What do people do at the park? You know, walk, watch a bird, and all that. And her lawyer said that they have no reason to arrest her, which is true. They have no reason to arrest her yet. And when she turns to Catherine and she says, tell Ray that the only way that he'll be able to catch Nate is if Nate wills it. And that's exactly what happened. Back at the lab, Ray and Henry, they processing the gifts that Nate has left. And in the box, there is a picture that was ripped in half. And the father of the bride would identify the man as in the picture as Jack York, which was Vivian's first husband. Ray and Brass question Avery about the phone call that he had with Nate, but Avery refuses to tell them what that call was about. They search his bank records, and they find out that there was a $2 million withdrawal. Yeah, keep that in mind. Greg and Nick, they are processing the scene at Dr. Cole's office, and the blood on the floor is a few days old, which matches their timeline. Because when they found the victims at the farm, the victims were already decomposed, probably a few days old. So a few decomposition had already begun. So matches their timeline. Nick thinks that all dismemberments of the victims took place somewhere else, which is true. Because to dismember a human victim, it's a very tiring activity and would leave a lot of evidence. So it did not take place in that office. And because they found a bullet in the wall, they say that the victims that they found are actually Dr. Cole and his nurse. Nick talked to Dr. Cole's wife and said that his wife said that Dr. Cole performed a plastic surgery on some shady people and what they could afford. It kind of reminded me of that episode on the Grissom's last episodes that happened in Koreatown.
That one.
Yeah. With the little boy.
Yep.
So Dr. Cole's wife says that she last saw her husband 5 days prior and she didn't call the police because she knew that her husband was having an affair with his nurse, Tegan Murphy. So, yeah, the nurse is called Tegan Murphy, yeah.
Tegan is spelled the wrong way.
Yeah, whatever. So, it's because Brie is a big Hogan fan, and there's a character in Doctor Who called Tegan.
And the actress who plays the faithy character calls Doctor Who fans Hooligans. And one of the seasons, it is, I am a Hooligan, it's spelled T-E-G-A-N, not T-E-A-G-A-N.
Well, so, Greg ran ballistics from the doctor's office, and he found out that it was from the same gun that was used to help Nate Haskell escape from prison. Now both cases are connected, which means that at some point, Nate Haskell's brides and Nate Haskell himself were in Dr. Cole's office. Now they say that Nate Haskell probably changed his face, and they don't know what he looked like. Oh, the $2 million. Now is a good time to remember the $2 million withdrawal, right? So the father of the bride, you guys remember the $2 million he had withdrawn? The first video that he had gotten from Nate Haskell, Nate told him that he knew about his little secrets. The secret that he had is that he would sexually assault his daughter. And she told Nate about it, and Nate was threatening to tell the police about it if he didn't give him $2 million. And he did. He gave Nate $2 million. But then Avery took his own life. After Nick and Greg find out that their case is connected to Ray's case, they all
together
to discuss what they know. And then Rey rolls out the timeline, which I'm going to put here again so everybody remembers what happened.
8 weeks ago, Haskell escaped from custody with Vivian's help. Then he went to Dr. Cole's for plastic surgery. Then he and Tila started making movies of Vivian in the old house to send to Daddy. Nate was careful to stay in the background. He didn't want us to know that he'd changed his face. Then he sent the two brides to kill the doctor and the nurse. They removed his chart, but not before they kidnapped the patient on the table, picked his car, his clothes, and the two bodies, brought them back to the house where they murdered him. That's when Bride turned on Bride, and Tina murdered Vivian. Now Tina starts to chop up the bodies. First is the body parts, sloppily, scattering them, not unlike her scattered mind. 2 days later, Tina shows up in a park, keep an eye on Mr. Tinsdale, and she disappears.
Ray's in the vendetta against Nate. He tells Catherine, I'm going to go, don't try to stop me, Catherine. And Catherine's like, no, we're not doing this alone, we're doing this together.
Mistake number one.
That was the time we should have pinched him. Anyways, Greg tells Nick that the blood pools from Dr. Cole's office actually belong to Dr. Cole's and his nurse. But the torso that they found in the barn in the beginning of the episode actually belongs to someone else. So another female. And the blood that they collected from the operating table belongs to unidentified male. And it was not Nate Haskell. They find out that Dr. Cole was actually treating another patient when Nate Haskell showed up with his brides to change his appearance. And then this poor patient was forced to help him in their plan. So Greg and Nick, they go back to the farm to talk to Alvin. That's, keep that name in mind. He recognizes Tina as his cousin's daughter. He doesn't really recognize Nate Haskell, but he does says that Tina has been staying in a house nearby with a man that had a bandit face. So they go to the house. And they actually realize that the house has surveillance. And when they go inside, there's a cello music play, which is foreshadowing what's going to happen at the end of the episode. And actually in the third episode, in the season finale, when they go up the stairs, they find more bodies. They find the bride that was missing. And they find Dr. Cole, his nurse, and the bride that was missing. And the unidentified male, Calvin Frost, which was the patient that was being treated before Nate Haskell went in. And Catherine decides to go to Dr. Cole's office to see if she can find Nate Haskell's charge, but she can't. But she does find Calvin's charge, which was the patient that was being treated before. And she finds a lot of fingerprints. None of them matches Nate Haskell's. Nate Haskell was careful enough to not leave any prints of his behind. Ray goes to autopsy and he tested Vivian's hands for lead. We've seen that before on A Bullet Runs Through It. I think it was part one. Warwick does the same thing. He tests one of the hands of the suspects for lead to see if he handled a gun. Ray does the same thing. It means that Vivian shot Dr. Cole and his nurse. Now we're going to go to the next episode, Hello and Goodbye, because the episode, this episode ends with Nate and his final bride, Tina Vincent, in that cello performance, and Gloria is playing Haskell and Tina Vincent. They are having dinner with Ray's ex-wife, Gloria, and her husband, Phil. They have moved to Los Angeles, and at some point, Nate drugs both of them, and then he asks Tina, tell me, how did you meet your husband? And see, Gloria starts telling him how she met Phil, and he said, no, how did you meet Ray? And then he proceeds to kill Phil.
And before that, Phil can sense something's up.
Yeah.
So Phil stands up and tells to defend Tina, and by connection, Ray. Who was a good guy.
Yeah. He's just a poor victim in his old and all this. He is killed with a bottle of, not killed, but he's knocked out with a bottle of scotch. No, actually, he's killed with a bottle of scotch. At the same time, there's this, I really like this whole, this specific frame that happens in this episode that Nate is looking in the mirror, but the mirror is wet. So we see like his reflection, but his reflection is wet. And Nate knows he's going to be caught. It's just a matter of time now. And he is fleeing. His mind is fleeing. His appearance changed, not that much, but enough so he wouldn't be recognized at first. And now he's going after his true target. So at the same time, Ray couldn't sleep because he was too anxious. He gets up, he takes a shower. At the same time, we have this montage of Nate taking the shower, screaming, taking all the blood out because he had just stabbed Bill 12 times. That's important. Why? Because he had 25 victims, but when he would stab people, so he stabs Ray 11 times.
Well, he did not.
Well, but
that's what Ray said. He did not finish stabbing me 11 times.
Yeah, and he ended up 11. He stabs to a body pulls more than 12 times. So, and then Ray's woken up by Catherine saying that they have a scene in LA. And we found out that the person that actually went over their captain's head was actually Morgan Brody. She saw the body and she thought that it looked like Haskell's. It looked like Haskell's words, so she contacted LVPD because it could be a connection. Catherine and Ray, they go to LA. And
Catherine recognizes Morgan.
They're like, I know you from somewhere, but she doesn't actually connect the face to the name until much later in the episode. When they see the body, and Morgan's like, I don't know if it's much. I saw the sand marks, and I know it has to be on the lookout. She knew she had to be on the lookout because Sophia decided to call in the feds, and the feds decided to put a lookout, a warning to police all over the country. Lookout for crime scenes with this specific characteristics. And then Morgan got the notice, and then when Morgan got called to the crime scene, she saw the characteristics, and she's like, gotta call LVPD. So Sophia did the right thing. Ray was so against involving the feds, but if Sophia hadn't done that, Ray would not have been one step closer to catching Nate. They turn the body around, and it's Phil.
Ray recognizes Phil.
They go to Gloria's home, and it's empty, but there's blood all over the floor and the walls as well. But they will find out later, but that it was not... The blood on the walls actually are from, like, bugs. They're just... I think there's some lights that just went over the blood and then over the wall. Ew, nothing happened. Haskell actually left a gift for Ray and Detective Salsa. He is like really pissed when Ray goes straight to the gift. And he's like, wait, what are you doing? That is evidence. I mean, he's right. Ray should have put some gloves on, but he didn't. He opens the gift and he sees Gloria's piece of sheet of music for Gloria in Excelsis Fields. And a postcard for Willoughby Observatory. And inside, there was the wedding ring. Behind the postcard, there was written, you never forget your first. That is important. This sentence is going to be repeated throughout this whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
They know that Nate keeps his victims alive for 72 hours. And they know that Gloria was kidnapped sometime during the previous night, which means that Gloria is most likely dead. And he tells Catherine, I can't do this, boss. He's already lying to Catherine. He's already lying to her. Catherine's like, go back to Vegas. We'll handle this. She calls in Sarah because Sarah is one of the best. I love my girl. My girl. I love her. Sarah comes to LA and an officer is tasked to drive Ray to the airport so he can come back to Vegas. But Ray ditches his escorts. Because it goes to a bar and everything that Nate has done to him up to that point keeps repeating itself in his head. And he leaves a message to Doc Robbins. He's like, there's only one thing left for me to do. If he hadn't left that message, probably Nick would not have gone to L.A. I mean, he probably would have, but...
He probably would have gone all ball and Hancock.
It was probably a cry for help or just a goodbye. He'd be like, I think he was just leaving a goodbye message for Doc, because I think he knew that one of the two things could happen. And he either killed Nate Haskell and saved Gloria, or Nate would kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah comes to the scene. And Doc Robbins plays that message to Nick. And Catherine calls Nick to come to L.A. to locate Ray. And Nick is like, I'm going to find him. I'm going to find his ass. I'm going to drag him back to Las Vegas myself. And he's lying, too. Because he's going to help Ray at the end of the day. He's going to help Ray do whatever he can to do whatever he wants to Nate Haskell. Sarah arrives at the scene, and she's helping Morgan. She's helping Morgan process the scene. And Morgan tells Sarah that she thinks all the blood that they have is from Haskell dragging Seal's body around the scene just to make them even more shocked. And all the way back in the LV lab, Greg, I was about to say Eric, I don't know why, is going through the security footage from the building, which shows Tina driving the car with Nate Haskell on the passenger seat. They actually found the abandoned car, and they found blood in the trunk, but there was no sign of Gloria at this point. She was already in Las Vegas. It was safe to say that she was already in Las Vegas at this point. They go through Gloria's social media, and they find out that Nate Haskell was at her presentation, and he was named as Willoughby J. Willoughby. They actually don't know who that was. Sarah looks at Morgan like, do you know who that is? And Morgan's like, I was this hired girl. What do you look at me for? I think it's Sarah that says, luckily, we know someone who was into history and science, and that is Greg. Greg looks at the history of Willoughby J. Willoughby, who actually turns out to be a very abusive guy. Willoughby was actually a wealthy benefactor who had shot his wife in 1943. Ray buys a gun unregistered in a notebook at a pawn shop, and he gets a postcard from Willoughby Observatory. I don't know why, because he already knows.
Address? Yeah.
Can type? Oh, why? He just Google it.
It's less of an online trip.
Yeah. So he does his own search for Willoughby, because Willoughby shot his wife in 1943. They found out that the murder took place at Penwick Hotel. So he goes to the hotel, and he found Tina Livingston, remember, the only bride that Haskell has now. He catches up to her, and he holds a gun to her head. Catherine calls Nick to find Ray, and...
Catherine!
It's the second time she has called him to find Ray. And Nick is like, I'm on the way.
You forgot what they did last season with him. Like, seriously.
So, we don't know exactly what happened between Ray and Tina until much later, but Nick arrives at LAPD, and Detective Souza takes them to the hotel where Tina's body was found.
Anybody left?
Is there anybody left? I mean, there's only Greg left who worked the scene. And Hodges as well. Like, can you imagine how angry Hodges would have been to, like, have to go out of the lab to have to work?
At this time?
Yeah. They go to the hotel room, and they found that Tina has been shot in the leg, in the head. And there are signs of torture. Seriously, it's so... Look, we've seen some pretty messed up stuff in CSI before, but I think this is one of the most messed up things we have ever seen.
To this point,
just keeps getting darker and darker. I think they were like literally, I don't know if there was competition with Criminal Minds, because Criminal Minds is pretty dark in itself, but damn. I'm pretty sure when I first saw those episodes, I had nightmares. I had nightmares with Nate Haskell. I kid you not. Sure, it was a great storyline, but damn, did it scare me. Catherine and Nick, they were starting to process the scene. Nick had to realize that there were tickets to a carnival. And they were written in blood behind the tickets. You'll never forget your first. And Detective Souza practically kicked both of them out and said, like, I have no idea if Langston is, if Ray Langston is involved in this crime scene. But until then, you guys are not going to process the scene. I mean, he's right.
Souza was like that from the very beginning. As soon as they stepped in.
Can you blame him, though?
No.
He Let me know. I mean, he trusts his guys more than he trusts the CSIs from Las Vegas, because the people from Las Vegas are the experts in Haskell, but that does not necessarily mean that he will trust them more, even though the Las Vegas people are considered one of the best at what they do, even though they have zero security in that lab. Morgan shows up at the scene. She realizes that Nick is actually looking at the tickets for the carnival. She gets out of the hotel and she looks at Nick Stokes. Stokes, right? And he's like, yeah. Nick Stokes at LVPD.com. He's like, yeah, check her out. You forgot something. And then she comes back and he gets a notification that she took a picture of the ticket of Edmund One. And then that's when Catherine remembers that Morgan is actually Echo's daughter. And she's like, yeah, I took my stepfather's name.
And like Kevin said, let them know how you can pick this. But she would, and I think she left before Sarah got there, because I was just doing the mental math. She has to be older than Lindsay. Because yes, Lindsay has just graduated high school around this time.
Yeah, she was at least a couple years older.
At least 45.
Yeah.
25, not 45, just to make clear.
Yeah, so back at the LA lab, the fingerprints at the hotel room came back to Ray Haskell and Tina. And the blood on the doorknob and the ring that Tina was wearing, there's blood on the doorknob and the ring that Tina was wearing. And the DNA under her fingernails came back to an unknown African-American male. And Detective So was like, what do you mean? It's not Ray? And can you not make a match? And then I don't know if it's Catherine or
it's Sarah. Catherine.
Yes, Catherine says that giving their DNA is not mandatory, and it's not mandatory, and Ray did not give his. I mean, they would have his Ray's DNA. Then Nick is able to track down Ray. And he tells Ray that he's with him. Like, let's do this. Let's track this bastard down. Let's track Nick down. Let's do this. I'm with you. I've got your back.
So, Nick is a cowboy.
Nick is, yeah. They want about Nick, but he is an actual cowboy. He lives up to his roots. He calls the lab. He calls Greg up and don't speak her. And he asks Greg to track down the tickets. And he tells Nick that he's afraid that everything that Ray is doing is going to reflect badly on the team. Even though Hodges is worried about him.
Which, you know, Hodges is right to be worried.
Yeah, I mean, the last time this sort of thing happened was with Nick, right? It was just a couple of years. What, I mean, like 5 years before? So, I mean, I didn't cry. They track down the tickets to Santa Monica Pier. And then Ray looks at a carousel, and then he looks back at Nick. You got my back, right? And then Nick is like, 100%. Then he's like, oh, me and Gloria had our first date at a carousel. They go there, and Nick is like, you gotta be careful. You don't know what's waiting for us. Both of them, they go after Haskell and
end up arrested.
Yeah, both of them end up arrested, and they are both really close to catching him. If police hadn't interfered, Nick would have caught him. If police hadn't interfered, Ray would have caught him. But Ray did stop dead on his tracks because Nick did scream at him. She's still alive, Ray. Gloria is still alive. Because at this point, Ray thought Gloria was dead, because Nate only kept his victims alive for 3 days. So it's fair to say that it probably has been 4 days at that point. So Ray thought he was avenging Gloria's death.
Ray gets sent home. This time, he actually does go home. And he's met at the terminal by the doc.
Yeah, and Ray's like, oh, the captain sent you here? And Doc's like, oh, if she hadn't sent me, I would have come either way. And she's really pissed at Nick too. And Nick is like, you really had to cowboy up? I love every time somebody calls Nick a cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even deny it.
Well, they're his family, so, you know, a lot to get with that stuff.
Sarah and Morgan, they are analyzing the sand that was found near Tina's body. And Morgan determines that it actually came from sandblasting. And she tested that composition to determine which building it might have come from. And she realizes that the building that it came from, it most likely it is going recent renovations. It was from a school and hospital or a government building. Okay, back in Vegas, Ray convinces Quim Coles. He kind of threatens Hodges, but Hodges puts his credentials on the computer, on the computer's lab, so he can use it because Catherine took away his credentials. He looks up Willoughby, and Greg walks by, and he sees Ray disobeying Catherine's orders. But he decides to help him.
The most level-headed person throughout this whole case, and parentheses with the Vega PD, is Sarah.
It just amazes me that, and forget me not, they quickly thought that Sarah was the one that committed a crime, but they were literally like,
they helping. Would always defend the guys.
Quite sexist, huh? Ray looks up Willoughby, and Greg actually tells Ray that Willoughby had two wives. The first one caught Willoughby cheating on her with the second wife, and they got in an argument. So Willoughby shot his first wife and the second wife, and while his second wife and her son Arvin looks up. The first wife survives, but the second one ended up in a psychiatry hospital several years later, and Arvin was sent to live with family in Nessus, Nevada. And Greg is like, oh my god, this hospital fits in with the description of the hospital that they're looking for in LA. He sends the team. He sends Catherine, Nick, Sarah, Morgan, and everyone else in LA to that building. But Ray connects the dots. While he sends Hodges for coffee, which takes a very long time, he realizes that Arvin Thorpe is the former that received him and Nick when they were called in for the remains at the barn. Ray looks in the yearbooks from Nessus, and then he found the picture of Warner Thorpe, who actually is Nate Haspel.
Mm-hmm.
In Los Angeles, they found the psychiatry hospital where Willoughby's second wife was sent. The second wife would turn out to be Nate Haspel's grandma. And Haspel was actually hiding there while he was in Los Angeles. Catherine, Nick, and Sarah, and Detective Sosa, they found bloody medical equipment. Probably the blood that they found there was used to write "You Forget Your First" on those tickets from the pier. But they didn't find any body there, only bags of sands. So Ray goes to the Thorpe family farm by himself. It's only after he found the body of Arvin Thorpe that he calls in for backup. And then we go to a darker account. Arguably one of the darkest episodes of CSI.
It is called Dark House.
In one of the darkest episodes of CSI. At the end of the last episode, he had found Gloria, and then Nate, who was wearing his father's clothes, actually, tells him...
After he killed his father, of course.
After he killed his father, tells him, "Welcome home, Ray." Which is really scary. I always thought he looked like Chuck the doll whenever I saw him wearing that clothes. Ray is welcomed in the house by Nate Haskell, who is wearing his father's clothes and also carrying a gun. He's carrying a gun. And Nate's like, "Careful, I've grown quite good with this. I have a gun." Okay, it's not his usual weapon. When Nate blames Ray for all of the wheel of his skills being gone, he shows his father that body. So Ray jumps at him and starts to punch him in the face, which is a very bloody scene. But Nathan seems to be having the time of his life. He's laughing and all that. Ray puts restraints on him, the handcuffs. But Nate tells Ray, "Why do you think Gloria is still alive? Ask her what I've done to her." I don't think Gloria would ever tell Ray what Nate has done to her. The scene is cut off, and we see Brass and two officers walking into the scene. And Brass finds Haskell dead on the stairs with ligatures marked on his wrists. But there are no restraints on his wrists. He goes up the stairs and finds Ray with Gloria. And then the scene gets cut, and then he tells Ray to go down the stairs and don't talk to anyone. We would find out later that what actually happened was he got the restraints and he put it in his pocket. At some point, when he got back to his CSI kit, was still on the scene, right? So I'm guessing that he restocked Ray's CSI kit. So
only with one thing, though.
Greg and Sarah, they arrived at the scene and they tell Brett that Nate Haskell's real name is actually Warner Thorpe, and he's Arvin's son, the former son. And Arvin was lying to them about not knowing who Nate Haskell was. Right when they get there, like we said last week, Sarah knew something was off. Sarah could feel that something was off. She was probably telling Grissom, look, this is happening. She probably called him on her 20-minute break and called him and be like, look, Grissom, look, yo, something's going on here. They have so said. Everyone think that Ray acts on self-defense. I mean, that's even what Brad said, a classic case of self-defense, but I don't think that's it and all that. If I was there, I don't want to think that was either. Catherine and Nick, they meet Ray at the hospital, and Catherine says that, oh, we need to do this by the book. I know you want to be with Gloria, but we need to do this by the book. Nick starts to process Ray, and he finds a white trace on his palms, but Ray couldn't tell him what the white trace was. We'll find out later that's actually chalk from the walls, and they came from Gloria's hands. There's a lot of blood stains on Ray, but it's not his. I don't know. Did you ever think if Nick actually got rid of that shirt?
I did not.
Do you think it would have?
Yeah.
After he realized that. I think Nick would have.
Me too.
You know what? Because I really love Nick. Okay, Nick is one of my favorite characters. But after he realized that some of the evidence that he was collecting on Ray might weigh heavily against him and it would not have been self-defense case, he was like, nah, I gotta get rid of this. Probably took that t-shirt home and burned it and then got rid of his report and redone it. Back at the station, Ackley calls Brad and he's like, I know you're the tour pals, but I is right here. But being like the boss might be good for something. So he gets to the Detective Schultz, who is with Internal Affairs, and he's like, oh, this is going to be an open showcase. Brett is still at the crime scene. Suicide Lengthen is still being processed at the hospital. It's going to take a long time. Why like some warning? Even Ackley wanted to take Ray off the hook. Even Ackley.
Well, because this is when the time started to become a decent guy.
I know, but like, out of everyone of this whole team, how come it's only Sarah that sees that something is off?
Because of Sarah. She did not have that close relationship with Ray as everybody else did.
I know, but like, I think Catherine saw that something was off too. And she could only tell Sarah. She could only count on Sarah to know that something was off.
Mm-hmm. Because Sarah was always the outside one looking in. When something was happening to the team. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Holly?
Oh my, Jesus. Rose?
And then.
Oh my god, because it's true, because she was the one brought in by Grissom to investigate Holly's death.
And then she's the one who had to investigate Ward again when he was having his gambling problems.
And she's the one that is actually looking at this investigation seriously.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
She's the one who follows the evidence. She listened to Hubby's advice.
I think at this point, Catherine was probably looking at this case and thinking that maybe Ray didn't do it on self-defense. She probably understood why he did it, but at the same time, she was like, no. So,
yeah.
Back at the house, they find out that Haskell, he somehow traveled through the railing with a lot of force and he fell 11 feet down to the land. That would require a lot of force. And Sarah's like, Greg, how do you explain no footprints from Nate Haskell? And how do you explain all this? And Greg was like, just because you're on top of someone doesn't mean you were the one in control. Anyone coming to Greg's standard defense, raise your hand right now. Look, I know Nate Haskell was a serial killer. I'm not saying that what Ray did was wrong, but it was plain murder. There's a lot of blood in the house, so they have to send samples back to the lab to see like which blood samples belong to Arvin, to Nate, to Gloria, and to Ray. Sarah actually follows a blood trail to the bedroom and there are bloody hooks as like the hooks that are used to fish attached to the bed. Catherine, she has to perform an SAE kit on Gloria and she finds out that Gloria was actually assaulted. But had not actually assaulted her himself. He used other objects to sexually assault her. Greg and Sarah, they found out that Nate has to chain Gloria up in a mattress and in a closet. And Greg finds a 9mm gun. And they think that Haskell was the one that was using it. And they are searching the room for Katya's casings and bullet holes when Sarah realizes that the wallpaper is covering something. So she removes it and she finds old boys' papers. And she tells Greg in this very dramatic line, Nate Haskell might have died in this house, but a serial killer was born in it. When Nick shows up, she tells him that it wasn't Alvin Trope that was the one that did the wallpaper, which means that something happened in that house. Greg is processing the master bedroom, and he found a lot of old blood spatter in the wall. But it was cleaned up. And tells Nick that house that they were was listed as the main house until 1979, but it was never rented out until they moved to the house across the road. That house was clearly hiding some things. Nick is all cowboy mode on. He's like, I'm going to tear this house apart and I'm going to find something that clears right up. So he decides to go to the backyard and thinks that if Nate Haskell was probably born in that house, there might be a few bodies buried in that house. And back in the hospital, doctor is telling Ray about Gloria's condition, but her mother shows up and she explodes on Ray and she blames Ray for what's happening to Gloria. I don't know how I feel about that, because Farley is his fault, but Farley is not.
But she's a mother.
Yeah.
Her daughter is laying in the hospital.
The samples that Greg and Sarah sent to the lab came back, so they decided to color code each of the donors in the hallway, and they found out that most of the blood belongs to Nate Haskell. And there's even a piece of his scalp on the floor, and the blood spatter indicates that at some point Ray had Nate Haskell on his back and was pounding his head onto the floor. Greg, how do you explain that? How do you explain this? Is this still self-defense if you're on top of someone and you're pounding their head against the floor to the point in which they are losing pieces of their scalp? Well, anyways, so Sarah realizes that there are only Ray's shoe prints in Nate Haskell's blood leading up to the railing, but there is no Nate Haskell's shoe prints, which means that Ray had Nate off his feet and threw him and drove him towards the railing. Even though there's evidence that suggests that Ray killed Nate, Greg is still saying that Ray acted in self-defense. Nick and Hodges are digging in the backyard. Hodges is on the scene, everybody. Hodges is not on the scene every day, but he is now. And trigger warning. They found skeletal remains of the family pets, which is true, as in
kids born with conduct disorder.
Yeah.
It later becomes antisocial disorder. Usually start out with animals.
Yeah.
Ted Bundy.
In autopsy, Dr. Robbins, he tells Catherine what he told IA, that Nate Haskell showed signs of physical abuse at the hands of his father. So his father is revealed throughout the episode that his father, he's not only killed Nate's mother, but he also abused his own kid. And he even tells Catherine, nothing that I'll tell you will change my mind that I think Ray did the right thing. But he tells Catherine that Nate's injury are consistent with someone who was in a fist fight. And Nate has a shattered knee, which is inconsistent with how he landed, because he landed face up. There's no way you get a shattered knee with your face up. And those of us who have a knee problem like me know that you can only get a knee problem if you landed with your knee bent or face down.
Oh, right into it when it was bent. Stupid tree.
Yeah. But Dr. Robbins also says that there are ligature marks on Nate's wrists. There are inconsistencies with the handcuffs that Brass used. Now, the mystery remains. What happens to the restraints? The team is digging through the backyard. Hodges finds a skeleton with a polyester jacket having the name Super Lux on it. Greg realizes that upstairs he found a mini fridge with a super luxe brand on it. And he realizes that in the past, brands would have people coming door to door with mini fridges, or there were things that were electric that would work and would show people and try to sell them. And the fridge in question had belonged to a guy named Nate Hassels. Not only did one of Thorpe kill that guy, he also stole his identity. The name of this guy was Douglas Nathan Hassel. The identity is confirmed through dental records because this guy was a missing person. Sarah, after concluding all of her findings, she tells Catherine what she thinks happened, that Ray was dominating the fight, even though Hassel was off his feet and clearly losing at one point. And Catherine actually points out the ligature on the restraint marks on Nate's hands, and they're the same width as the department issues. And evidence suggests that Ray did cuff Nate at one point, but neither Sarah nor Greg were able to find those handcuffs. So Nate Hassel did not have his hands cuffed behind his back. So at some point, he was cuffed, and then his restraints were cut off by Ray. But Sarah and Greg could not find it. Catherine goes to the hospital to try and question Gloria, but Gloria was in no place to, was in no position to answer the questions. Sarah searches in Ray's kids for the handcuffs, and she finds both of the handcuffs because they are issued, because on their kids, they have to carry, no, actually three handcuffs, right? Mm-hmm. They have to carry three handcuffs, and she finds three handcuffs on his kids. And Greg is like, oh, there you have it. But Sarah is like, that is weird. That is really weird. And Catherine had even questioned Greg about it. Yeah, like, you still know how to pick a kid. And they give the report with everyone's signature on it that CSI Langston acted in self-defense. So Ray goes back to that, to the house of Haskell's, which is now how they call it, about how the house is being called. And Brass goes there and says that he tells Ray that he killed a murderer in self-defense. And that's how we found out what actually happened. He cut the cuffs off, punched him in the kidney because of the kidney that from him.
Yeah.
And then he kicked Haskell in the knee because to incapacitate him, that's how Nate Haskell shattered his knee. And he's like, oh, you can't walk? Don't worry, I'll carry you all the way. And then he shoved him through the railing and then kills him. That's when Brett arrives and taps and then pockets the restraints that would implicate Ray. And Ray had a conscience. I think at that point he was considering telling everyone what actually happened. And Ray's like, there are only two people that actually know what happened in the night. And that needed to stay that way. I think that two people was, I don't know if it was referring to Ray and himself, or Ray and Nate, or otherwise Ray would be trial for murder.
And everybody's job should be on the line.
Yeah.
So Brad told him to keep it to himself.
Yeah.
Because he protects his dad now.
Ray, in the end of the episode, Ray is being questioned by IA, and he did admit to killing Hassel. But then the detective is like, oh, it was a self-defense or a murder. And then it's cut off. Like, we don't know if Ray said self-defense or murder. But since everybody is working again on the next episode, which is
like 73 seconds.
Yeah, the DB era begins. I believe that he said self-defense.
And also, the mom apologizes to Ray about what she said. And Ray goes with him.
Ray and Nate mirrored each other. They had the exact same upbringing. Ray and Nate, they had the exact same upbringing. But Ray decided to be good and Nate decided to be bad. That was the difference. You know what? I really like the Nate Hassel storyline. The Ray even helped him with being Duke and Jane and the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde case, which we will cover in the future episode. But I think it's a great arc, and it lasted a lot longer than Natalie Davis for a reason, right? But I think it's really nice when this type of serial killer cases, they lasted more the Marie season because it keeps the viewer guessing when they're going to come back. And you know that when they, this character is come back, it's going to be a hell of an episode. The viewer is going to be like, we're going to go through it with the main character. I keep remembering the episode 100 from Criminal Minds. If you know, you know. But like that episode was great as well. Really, it really kept you on edge, just like this one in the Dr. House. I think they were trying to update and see with this one because they kept building this character of Nate Haskell throughout the season. Like, he's already introduced as a serial killer. He's established as one that we as a viewer have never heard of him. But then he escaped from jail and then we hear about his crimes and then the CSI first, they have to process the scenes and all that. And the effect that he had on the show, it's really great. I don't know if all of us as fans agree on the character of Ray Langston. I don't know if we all agree if we like him or not, but I think we all can agree that Nate Haskell was one of the great villains in CSI. Next week, we're going to be back with our CSI New York.
Doing this finale from season 6, I think.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that. If you guys want us to cover something, you know, cover some episode, some character from CSI, CSI Vegas, or CSI New York, we'll obviously do it. So please just reach out to us on our social media. Our Instagram is CSI.talk, again, CSI.talk, or on Instagram and our Twitter is, and our email is CSI.talkpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you live in Latin America, CSI Vegas season 2 is on every Thursday at 10 p.m. Brazilian time. So if you want to watch that, that's great. We love you guys so much. Bye.
Love y'all. Bye.